You'll take up the challenge Nate gave us all and already start to think about the people that God is just going to lead into your life over the next few weeks, where you will be able to invite them to experience Christmas at Central with us. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the concluding message in our series, When Things Get Toxic, where today we're looking at when things get toxic in the church. Now, let me say from the beginning that we were mindful when we put this together. This can kind of feel a little bit negative, right? But let me just say, it doesn't have to be. If you're new to Central, let me just say that there's kind of two ways you can structure the church. You can structure the church in such a way that you can kind of control the negative to make sure that only the good things happen. Or you can kind of structure the church in a way that there's more freedom. And that's the way that we kind of structure the church here. We actually believe that the church can be an agent for good and for God in the world. And we believe that in order to be that agent, it actually needs to be set free, not controlled. And so it's with that premise that we started our Water's Edge network a number of years ago, where we just said, you know what, if you empower people in the congregation to be the hands and feet of Jesus, you can achieve far more that way for God in the world than you can by kind of controlling everything. And so we've moved from Central here to kind of churches all around our region, all around our nation, and around our world. And we believe that that is possible when you actually expect Christians to do the Christ-like thing. We believe that's the best way of doing ministry. Now, the question is, of course, when we share with people what it is that we do and how we do it, they're like, you give people that much freedom? And we're like, yeah. And they're like, what do you do when the bad stuff happens? Like, you just work through it. That's what you do. And they're like freaked out by that. Because some people don't like dealing with junk. Well, folks, if you don't like dealing with junk, don't come to the church. Because the church is just basically a collection of broken people who had the courage at one point in their time to acknowledge that they were broken and they needed help. That's the church. If you want to find the perfect church, don't join it because you'll mess it up. Right? So when it comes to this whole idea of toxicity in the church, the reality is that not every church is toxic, but every church is full of broken people who in their worst moment can act toxically. And the question is, what do we do then? So what we're going to do in this message, I'm going to highlight at the first part of this, two scriptural reasons why it is that we can walk away from a toxic church. Now, through this series, we've said that when toxic people act toxically, there's a moment when we need to walk away. Jesus walked away from toxic people. We need to be comfortable that sometimes God tells us to walk away. We've also said, listen, when you're dealing with broken people are not toxic people, but maybe broken people act toxically. When that's the case, you don't walk away, you set boundaries. So what we're talking about in the first part here is toxic churches. When is it right to walk away from a toxic church? Well, scripturally, you have to say that there are only two reasons to walk away from a church. The first is theological. There are theological reasons why a church becomes toxic. When you think of theology, we can think about this on a number of levels, okay? We can think about walking away from the church because the ecclesiology is something we don't agree with. Ecclesiology, the doctrine of the church. Okay, who does what? Whether you ordain women or not. Some people walk away from the church for reasons like that. Or eschatology is another one. That basically means the doctrine of the future. That unless you're a mid-trib, post-rapture, whatever else it is, you're not going to go. You go to Alabama, by the way, and you drive down some of those streets and you'll see churches that are actually built, named after their eschatology. Seriously, it is like 16 words long and I'm like, what on earth is that about? People leave churches over things like that. But believe it or not, according to the scriptures, that isn't a biblical reason to leave a church. In fact, there's only one scriptural reason our culture and our history gives us to leave a New Testament church. And we discover the heart of it in Galatians chapter 1, verse 6 through 10. Have a look at this. Paul writing to the church in Galatia. He says this, "I'm astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you to live in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel," which is really no gospel at all. "Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach a gospel other than the one we preach to you, let them be under God's curse. As we have already said, so now I say again, if anybody is preaching to you a gospel other than what you accepted, let them be under God's curse. Am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? If I was still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Jesus Christ." This is the Apostle Paul, and he basically says, hey, listen, the gospel, the good news of Jesus is at the heart of every New Testament church. And if we shift from that, let the curse of God fall. That's what Paul says. Now, we are from a tradition, the Protestant tradition, the Reformed tradition, not the Reformed Church, but the Reformation tradition that actually came out of Catholicism, and at its heart, the basis of this was the essence of the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. This was something that the reformers, Martin Luther, John Calvin, Ulrich Zwingli, and a number of other people believed to be so essential that they came out of the Catholic Church and a new tradition stood. The gospel. That's the reason, scripturally speaking, that people can walk away from a church. Now, the word gospel is from the Greek word evangelion, which basically means good news. It has a broad meaning and it has a narrow meaning. In the narrow sense of the term, it means believing in Jesus. In the broad sense of the term, it actually refers to obeying all of those things that Jesus commanded. It's just like the word faith. The word faith can talk about that personal decision to put our faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. But when you talk about faith, it also has that doctrinal component to it. It's the same with the gospel. There's a doctrine to it. And as a result of that, an organization that preaches another gospel is essentially toxic. That's why neither Protestants nor Catholics, for that matter, recognize Mormons, and now we're not allowed to call them that anymore, Latter-day Saints, okay, or Jehovah's Witnesses as being a Christian religion. Why? Because these organizations flatly deny the deity of Christ, that Jesus' atonement, his death, makes us right with God, and that we are saved by faith through grace. They flatly deny it. And as a result of that, we say they are not preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is the essence of the gospel. And so a church that doesn't preach the gospel, the Apostle Paul and the reformers said, is ultimately a toxic church. Now, if you ever find yourself in a toxic church where it suddenly becomes clear to you, wait a minute, they're not preaching the gospel, what do you do? Do you walk away? Or do you stay? I think what we need to be careful of in a situation like this is assuming that it's always right to walk away. When making a decision about whether to walk away or to stay, we have to be both careful and patient. You see, the church, like individuals, is capable of serious error. What would happen if every person in your life who made a mistake you walked away from? Life would be a mess. What we know is when we make a mistake, when we commit an error, a sin of some kind, what is important is repentance. We know that we can be restored if we repent. The same is true for the church. Whether one stays or walks away is actually a profound matter of discernment. Two friends of mine attended the same church. A new pastor came in, and this pastor was great, brought in lots of different ideas, and the church started to grow. But as the months went on, my friends realized, wait a minute, this pastor isn't preaching the gospel. In fact, he never, ever mentions Jesus in his sermons. Folks, I hope you would hear it and quickly discern whether Steve and I move away from mentioning Jesus in our sermons. He never mentioned Jesus in any of his sermons. And they're like, wait a minute here. So rather than talk to anybody else, they went and talked to the pastor and asked him, hey, wait a minute, we've noticed that you never mentioned Jesus in any of your sermons. And with that, he said quite clearly that he didn't believe the gospel in the way that the Bible presents it. They had a decision to make. What did they do? One of my friends, who would ultimately go around speaking, felt that the preached word was so important that they had to walk away. So they did. Gracefully and quietly, they left. The other one of my friends believed that the church is not driven by the pastor. It's actually about the people in the congregation. And they felt a commitment to the people in the congregation, and they decided to stay and pray. Matter of discernment. I remember years ago being in Hamburg, Germany, preaching. We had a 12:30 service time, and many of the times I'm like, 12:30, that's such a terrible time, right? Especially when you got toddlers. But there was one particular guy who really loved it. He came to me after a service one day, and he spoke to me, and he was a German, but his command of English was just exceptional. And I said, so what do you do? And he actually said, I'm a pastor in a Lutheran church. I said, what are you doing here? And he said, have you ever been to a Lutheran church? He said, Craig, I'm surrounded day in and day out with people who do not believe the words that we read. I said, so why are you there? He said, because God has called me there. But I need to come here as often as I can just for my soul to get nourished, not for me to quit on the call that God had given me. And every time I stand in that pulpit, I preach this gospel message to people who think they know it, but they do not know it at all. See, there's a scriptural reason to walk away from a church, and it's when the church shifts away from the essential truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But just because a church shifts that way doesn't necessarily mean that a believer needs to walk away. What is more important than whether you stay or walk away is to discern, what is God saying to me? But scripturally speaking, a church becomes toxic when it shifts from the gospel of Jesus Christ. The second reason, you can see it on the screen and got excited and pushed the button, is leadership reasons for walking away. I believe that when a leader demonstrates tendencies that basically put them at odds with the character of Christ, it is permissible for us to walk away. A scripture reference for you, 3 John. And notice there's no chapter in this because 3 John is basically only one chapter. 3 John chapter 1, obviously, verses 9 and 10. This is what the Apostle John writes. I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, who puts himself first, that's what that means, will not welcome us. You get the picture here, right? Here's the Apostle John, the guy who's had the revelation in Patmos. Okay, people think he died on the island of Patmos. He didn't. He left Patmos, went to Ephesus, and then he's overseeing these churches in Asia Minor. In one of these churches, this guy has put himself first, and he refuses to acknowledge the Apostle John. You got a feel for this guy? So when I come, John says, I will call attention to what he is doing. So what is he doing? Spreading malicious nonsense about us. Not satisfied with that, he even refuses to welcome other believers. Now, what you had is itinerant missionaries around that, at that time going around to different churches. And when these missionaries who were going from town to town, like Jesus said, were preaching the gospel, they would go to a church and it would be expected that these missionaries would receive support from the local church. He wouldn't even welcome them. He also stops those who want to do so, like the guy who John is writing to, and even puts them out of the church. You got a feel for this kind of, for this guy? He is inhospitable. He is arrogant. He is a self-appointed leader who rejects the authority of the Apostle John and the contents of the teaching that John gave. We're not sure what that refers to, but we think it's the letter of 2 John. So the way he handles conflict, his character, his questionable motives, mark him out as an abusive leader, elevating his will over and above the church itself. Leaders are the architects of the culture of a church. But this leader cultivated a culture of ungodly control, of arrogance that resulted in abuse of power. Friends, that's toxic. Completely toxic. When a leader demonstrates that kind of control, they need to be resisted. It is in the interest and the responsibility of the congregation to ensure that the leaders demonstrate and cultivate a philosophy of leadership that is Christ-like in every regard. Diotrephes didn't do it. Have you ever had an encounter with a leader who didn't do it either? After Vipka and I had been married for 6 months, 6 months of Wales was enough for her. We decided to move to Germany. I couldn't speak German at that point in time. I've shared before, I took a job in a bank and learned German the hard way by failing each and every day. It was therefore welcome relief for me when Joan, a dynamic leader with a big vision for what God could do with young adults, came to us and said, "Hey, I know you've been involved in ministry before. Would you like to join a leadership team for within the church that we're attending? That we've got a bold vision of creating a kind of service for young adults." We agreed. We joined the team, and it started off really, really well. And the great thing was there was an American guy by the name of Paul from California over with his wife, two young children. He was doing ministry with sport in that same area. He was on this leadership team, and he was a godsend. Finally, someone who understood my language. I was smart enough to realize we didn't speak the same language. But he understood it. Paul and I met together every week. We would pray together. And he was kind of like that oasis for me, just in a difficult time of settling into a new culture, new country, new church. It was great. God was doing great things. But there was a problem. As the ministry kept growing, Joan's leadership became more and more autocratic and totalitarian. And one night, she introduced this plan in the leadership meeting that was so radically different that Paul naturally wasn't so sure and asked a question. Joan responded, "Paul, you back me 100% or you're out right here, right now." I was stunned. There was an elder in the room, and I looked at the elder, and the elder said nothing. Paul said, "I'm not saying I'm not going to back this. I'm saying, don't we need to think this through?" To which Joan repeated, "You back me 100% or you're out." To keep it short, Paul was booted right there, right then, that night. Worse still, in the 48 hours that followed this, I heard some of Paul's prayer requests being circulated amongst some of the fringe leaders as reasons why he wasn't able to be on a team. Requests like, his wife was from California, they were used to the sun, and they moved to Germany with 10 months of the year was gray cloud. Kind of what it's like to move from Florida to Michigan, really, right? You get the feeling. I heard this and I'm like, this isn't right. The culture that is being cultivated here is so wrong. And so I picked up the phone and I called the pastor, I called John, and I got to know him pretty well, and he welcomed us with open arms. And I said, hey, John, I got a problem, and I shared the problem. And I never forget his answer. He said, Craig, if I sneak up each objective sign can. I don't know if I can be objective. I'm like, what? I don't know if I can be objective. You don't know if you can be objective? What does that mean? Craig, I don't know whether I can be objective. I was so dumbfounded. That's not the answer that I expected. I was so dumbfounded, I basically said, look, I can't, if you don't know whether you can be objective, then I certainly know that I can't serve in a culture of leadership like this. You can add my name to Paul's name when you communicate to the leaders on Wednesday night. And I put down the phone. I was shocked. I was stunned. So at the leaders' meeting on that Wednesday night, Paul's departure and Victor, my departure, were announced, and our names were added to that list. And pretty soon after that, Paul and Mary left the country. They went back to California. And Victor and I were now faced with a decision. What do we do? Do we stay in that church or do we leave it? We prayed about it, and we felt it was right to stay. And so for, I think it was about 2 years, 2.5 years, maybe even three. 3 years after that, each and every Sunday, we would go to a church where people looked at us. I have no idea what was communicated, but let me just say, the people that were involved in leadership with us never spoke to us from that day on. Walked in there every day. Vipka was working in an old people's home. She would sometimes work on a Sunday morning. We only had one car. And so my mother-in-law would come and pick me and my daughter up. She was really young at the time, and we would go to church. And I would love it in those moments if I was actually volunteering in kids' ministry, because I wouldn't have to see anyone. You get the feeling? It was so difficult. See, leaders are the architects of culture. And Jonah cultivated a culture that was so far removed from biblical leadership that it would have been well within our rights to walk away. But we chose to stay. We chose to stay because God didn't tell us to leave. See, when it comes to toxic churches or toxic behavior from toxic people, the reality is there are biblical reasons why we can walk away. I've named you two. But there are also permissible reasons to walk away from a church. What I mean by that is, you all know people who've walked away from churches, right? For more reasons than I've just said. I just shared with you what I believe to be biblical reasons why we can walk away. But there are also permissible reasons to walk away. And do you know why? Because the Bible, get this, is not a textbook of every human experience. You're not going to find every single human experience narrated out in the Bible. You're not going to find it. And so there are biblical reasons for walking away. But there are also permissible reasons for walking away. So for example, a couple came to me a little while ago and said, hey, pastor, a church is starting in a small village where we are, and we really feel that we need to go and help them start. That's not in the Bible. Do you think that's permissible? Of course it's permissible. The challenge with this, of course, comes to those things underneath, right? Like, I don't like the worship, so I'm going to go to a church where I can, where I do. Or the kids' ministry isn't that good. Or the student ministry isn't that good. Or they're not doing Bible studies in the way that I want them to, in the time that I want them to. It's this kind of consumerism that drives a lot of the church. And then we ask ourselves, is this a permissible reason to walk away, yes or no? And the answer to that is, what is God telling you? What is God telling you to do? Because the reality is, just because it's not a biblical reason we walk away doesn't mean that we have to stay. What is God telling you? I love this passage in Romans 14:23. Romans 14:23 says this, "And everything that does not come from faith is sin." See, there are some things, there's some guidance you're going to need in life, and you're going to look for a similar experience in the Bible, and you may not find it. And the question is, what do you do then? The answer is, you do what God tells you then. Somebody came to me a little while ago and said, "Pastor, I want to meet with you because I'd love to become a part of Central, and I just want to know whether that's okay for you." And I was like, "Okay, tell me the backstory." And they said, "Well, we're in our church, and we really don't like the music, and we actually like the music here." Folks, it happens that way around here too. And I looked at them and I said, "You know that leaving a church because of the music is not a biblical reason to leave the church, right?" They looked at me, stunned. "Are you telling me that we're sinning in leaving our church?" I said, "Of course not. Just because it's not a biblical reason for you to walk away doesn't mean you have to stay. The question is, what is God saying to you?" See, what we've got to be careful of in an area like this is that the Church of Jesus Christ with a capital C is so big and so strong that believers can undermine the church by picking up those consumeristic tendencies and jumping from one church to another one without actually committing to a family of faith. In Hamburg, Germany, we had an international congregation that was 60 different nations, 35 different denominations. Folks, we had to focus on the gospel there, because if we got onto ecclesiology or eschatology, no one would ever agree. It had to be the gospel. We had to keep Jesus the main thing. When we did that, we were fine. We shifted, we were in trouble. What a great way to build a church on Jesus and nothing else. But there was a problem. The problem was, every 3 years, the church literally changed over 100% until we could grow the semi-permanent internationals. Well, the good thing with that, of course, is if there's a toxic person, all I'd have to do is wait them out and they'd be gone. But the bad thing with that is a lot of the people who were on the stage were people who would be transferred in their business in like a six-week notice. And in 6 weeks, we would go from having this incredibly organized music to having no one scheduled at all. And then guess what? God would do what God does, and he'd bring in other people, and then we'd have other people up there. The only problem is those people didn't do worship in the style of the last people. So our style became a little bit of, "Okay, God, what have you got for us next?" It went from hymns to Israel Houghton. If you like that kind of stuff, it's great. If you don't, it's a real struggle. Well, they were one couple. They really didn't like that. And they came to me and they said, "Pastor, I'm really struggling with the music." And I'm like, what do you want me to do? I said, "You've been in the church long enough. You kind of know that we don't really have a lot of control over that. God has given us these people, and that's kind of what we do. I don't know how long we'll be doing that for. It depends how long God gives them to us, but it's kind of what we do." Well, "Pastor, I don't know whether we can stick for that." And I said, "Look, that's okay. If God is telling you to leave, then go find a different church." "Pastor, but there isn't another church." "Ah," I said. "So maybe your choice is between giving up the habit of meeting together or working through the fact that your preference is just a preference." They stuck at it. And a couple of years later, they moved, and they came to me before they moved, and they said, "Pastor, do you know what? While we would never have freely chosen to worship in a congregation like this, with music like this, what God has done in our own hearts because we worked through our own preference has been nothing short of amazing. Thank you. As a result of this, we now sit in church and we can find people and spot people who are nothing like us and wrestle just like we did. And it's been such an awesome experience." See, the challenge with churches when the Christian community is strong is that if we don't like something, we leave. But that's not a biblical reason to walk away. Now, does that mean that it's sinful to walk away? No, the question is, what is God saying to you? If it's not done in faith, then it's wrong. That leads me to this point. Whether you walk away or whether you stay, the most important thing for all of us is essentially to preserve the unity of the church. Notice this, please. Capital C church. Not lowercase c church. When we're in a culture with so many churches, it is really important to hold on to the fact that there is only one church. The Church of Jesus Christ. Whether we stay or whether we walk away into another church, local church, small c, the most important thing is that we preserve the unity of the Church of Jesus Christ. How do we do that? By pursuing harmony. Remember that message a little while ago? Harmony, dissonant harmony, two notes played together at the same time that don't seem to belong, and you listen to them and you think that doesn't belong. Yes, it does. Dissonant harmony is a part of music. In dissonant harmony, what we recognize is, hey, these things belong together, even though what our ears want, the resolution to it, and at some point you pray that that will come. So, unity in a church doesn't mean uniformity. It doesn't mean we all have to agree on the same thing. Why, the reformers didn't even agree on everything, but they agreed on the main thing. What's really important is whether we go or whether we stay, we actually preserve the unity of the church. And most of the unity is destroyed by what our tongue is allowed to say. There's no place for it. When Wiebke and I were in Germany all of that time, in that experience with Joan, we never spoke a word about it for the 2.5 years that we were there. We wrestled on the inside, but we never spoke a word. And here's why we never said anything, because whether we stay or whether we walk away, we have to trust that God protects his church and disciplines his saints. Back to the story of Joan. After about three and a half years in Germany, we moved to London to resume our ministry calling, and I think we'd been there for about a year, maybe not quite a year at that time, when through a casual conversation, somebody just mentioned to us that Joan, not getting what she wanted in the church, had taken a large number of people with her and actually started a new church. The church she started grew quickly, and it was doing some really, really great things. Folks, on the inside there, I am so frustrated when I hear this. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And then I realize in that moment that that kind of bitterness, that kind of resentment that I'm holding, it doesn't change the past. All it does is destroy my future. And then in this moment, I just have to let it go and let God. Because I don't want somebody else to be in control of my future. And I really do believe if we hang on to bitterness and unforgiveness, it has the potential to destroy our future. So Wiebke and I prayed and we just let it go. A few years after that, we got a phone call that Joan and another co-leader in the church that they'd started with both dismissed. What had been hidden from sight for so long had now been brought to light. See, when you're dealing with toxicity in people, we have to realize that God protects his church. I will build my church and nothing, nor even the gates of hell or even a toxic leader can stand against it. But you also have to allow God to discipline his people too. On a return to Germany over a Christmas period, Wiebke and I were approached by a number of the leaders at that point in time apologizing to us for the way that we were treated. It took years for that to happen. Wiebke and I have long believed that unforgiveness doesn't change the past, but it can damage our future. As I'm wrapping this up, I go back to that moment with John, where John said to me, Craig, I don't know if I can be objective. How do we deal with toxicity? For so many years, I thought I'd done the right thing. In basically staying in the church, staying quiet, working for the unity of the church, and I thought that's all I could do. And then I realized I could have done so much more. See, in the arrogance of youth, I kind of didn't listen to what John was saying. John said, I don't know whether I can be objective. He didn't say he didn't see it. He didn't say it wasn't his responsibility to deal with it. He was a new pastor in a new church dealing with strong leaders. He simply said, I don't know whether I can deal with this now. See, when it comes to toxicity in the church, this idea that we have to struggle with this alone is wrong. What I could have done, what I should have done, is I should have said to John, John, I don't know what that means, but can we pray together over this? Can we just pray that what is wrong in this culture of leadership, God would actually put right? That's what I should have done. But I felt that when it comes to this toxic behavior, I had to do it all on my own. Friends, the reality is that in a church, in a community, in a nation, in a marriage, the worst thing that we can do is to keep someone else's toxic behavior to ourselves. Sometimes the best thing we can do is go to people we trust and pray. And I tell you, if I'd have done that, I'd have had so much more resolution and so much quicker. We're going to take communion at this point. And there's one thing that I was reminded of in preparing for this message is that not only did the reformers basically say that the gospel is something that needs to be preserved, they also said that the sacraments need to be preserved too. The Romans basically had 7 sacraments, but the early church had 2, baptism and the Lord's Supper. They said at the heart of a New Testament church, what it means to be the church is actually to practice these rites or these sacraments. Now, these rites were so important that these reformers, Calvin, Zwingli, Luther, so many others, they disagreed on a number of the details. But they were all agreed that within these sacraments, there is the picture of the gospel itself, the picture of grace, and the picture of forgiveness. And we want to just wrap up this series by thanking God that on a cross, the cause of all toxicity, the controlling power of sin, has been dealt with once and for all through Jesus Christ. And as a result of that, for every person who's put their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, they now have the ability to say no to that toxic behavior and yes to Christ. Friends, I don't know in what area of life you are broken, but I know this. If you've acknowledged Jesus Christ, you've acknowledged your brokenness.